Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Em, and with a new year comes a new series, and that's five things. Because can we just get to the point already? I'll still be interviewing some of the most inspiring women out there who are making moves. Only we're going to get right to the good stuff. So we're talking the five key takeaways to get you all of the value in a quicker, snappier, more digestible episode. So with that, here's five things with Sarah LaFleur. Sarah, hi, and welcome to the Big Move Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So nice to meet you. We're so thrilled to have you on, and we have a lot to cover. So we are going to dive right into things. For those that might not already know who you are, can you give us a quick background, what Sarah is all about?
Sure. So my name is Sarah LaFleur. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called MM LaFleur, which is actually named after my mother. MM is my mother's nickname. We are a women's clothing brand based in New York City, and we actually just celebrated our 10-year anniversary. So that's a little bit about me.
Congrats.
Thank you. Yeah, it's cannot believe it's been a decade. But
yeah, absolutely. And we have a lot of follow-ups on that because, I mean, I feel like it's such a milestone, not only like after the pandemic for any brand or business, but in fashion and retail, like a whole other beast, I'm sure.
For sure. And especially surviving the pandemic, being a brand that mostly catered to busy professional women who are going into the office. It's been a wild ride.
Absolutely. Well, as a starting point, I love to ask my guests what their big moves are. Is there a pivotal turning point, something in your life, in your career that has really shaped your journey and your story?
Well, I guess I would say the moment I ended up quitting my last job, I don't even want to say to start MM LaFleur, I ended up quitting my last job because I was in a miserable place. It was, for so many reasons, just a toxic job for me. And I didn't know what to do. I was, I'd only been at the job for 4 months, but I did the kind of unthinkable thing of leaving a job before a year. You know, I just said, I got to get out of here. And I'm so miserable. And so I left not knowing what I would do. And I spent like a good month crying on my sofa. But I would say like that definitely was my pivotal point because had it not been for that kind of failure that I had to face, I don't think I would have started this company.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I've been talking to so many women and so many podcast guests about transitions lately and change. I feel like there's been so much of that after the pandemic. What were you going through mentally during that time? And I guess like what pulled you through that like transitional period?
So, I think in retrospect, I can speak about it with some clarity, but I would say in the moment, it felt like really the rug had been pulled out from underneath me. I thought this was a job that I would stay in for a few years. It was a career that I had dreamed about. And I think I very quickly realized, oh, this is not going to be it. I've made a mistake. And I think it only in retrospect did I realize I had to go through all that time. But I think when you're going through a really, really dark time, it's really hard to see, what's right. What's the right next step for you? Mm-hmm. And I would say I spent actually a lot of hours in my therapist's office, and I spent a lot of time talking to my parents, to my friends about just what I wanted to do next with my life. And I think now you could say like, okay, it all ended up in a good place. But I think for people going through that transition period, it can feel incredibly painful. It's like angst ridden, if anything. So, I try to tell people who are going through these big changes, like just be kind to yourself because it is in many ways, it is much easier to just cruise, to just show up at a job every day and kind of clock in and clock out. I think to actually force yourself to make these big changes, it can be really rewarding at the end of it, but the process I think can look very messy.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I love that you mentioned therapy. I'm a huge proponent of therapy. And sometimes I feel like when you go to friends and family, you know, you're getting a lot of opinions thrown your way. And I love that in therapy, it's this non-biased, like professional opinion. And I feel like if you can find the right person that you have a great connection with, it can just do wonders.
I think that's so true. And, you know, I have very, very supportive parents who really encouraged me. And, you know, I would say my mom really, I mean, I named the company after her, right? She's my inspiration. And she herself is a longtime entrepreneur. But she was actually the one who was saying, are you sure you want to leave, you know, your full-time corporate job? Like, I think you have a really good gig going for you. Mm-hmm. And I think parents, for the most part, just really want to see their children be happy in a stable environment. The idea of them throwing themselves out there, I think is, you know, if you're terrified, I think your parents are often even more terrified for you. So I totally hear you, Emily. I think that unbiased opinion, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that might be, I think is super valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. And you said it, the first word that comes to mind is like stability. I feel like my parents always wanted me to have that like security, stability, and, you know, entrepreneurship is not that way at all. So
not that. That's right. It is not that.
Totally, totally. So you are a busy woman. You are a founder. You are a mom of three. And remind me, your children are all under the age of...
Under three. Yeah, they're 2.5, actually, all three of them. Okay. So they're a lot. They're a yeah. lot for sure.
So what's your biggest life hack? Like, what enables you to do all the things that you do on a day-to-day, week-over-week basis?
I mean, on a really, really practical level, Sunday afternoon is – you know, usually my husband and I carve out an hour on Sunday afternoon, which is, gosh, it's really unsexy and not fun, but that is really where we talk about the coming week, where we say, you know, who has early morning meetings, who has late dinners or meetings or whatnot, you know, what plans do we have on the weekends, et cetera. We just really talk through all of it. So I guess structure-wise, let's call it a hack, but I would say the biggest hack of all is that we have a lot of help. And, you know, just to give you like some transparency about what that means, like we have an au pair who lives with us, who is, you know, helps get the kids ready in the morning and then picks the kids up from school. We've got someone who comes part-time to, you know, prepare meals for us and clean and do things around the house. And so we've got a lot of help. And then the other thing is my mother-in-law, she lives in Washington, D.C., but she loves the kids and she's always here visiting and helping us out. So I do think, you know, I just have to be like very upfront about the amount of support that we get and the support that we have to actually like make our dual careers work. I think there are many ways to do it, but that happens to be ours.
Yeah, absolutely. It takes a village. They say this for a reason, right?
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I've really just to put a, like, just to pause there for a moment. I think of just being at home and staying at home with the kids, which I have done, you know, multiple occasions over the past 2.5 years, especially as we were battling COVID and you know, I think just childcare was really hard to come by. It is a really difficult full-time job. And so I very much think of it as, I have asked someone to take on that role so I can work outside the home. But there's no denying that childcare is like a really important part of making our lives work. And I feel like sometimes we don't realize how much work childcare is. So anyway, I just wanted to share that, you know, before saying that, like I make it all work because I'm superhuman, which is not at all the case.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I feel like when I was becoming a first-time mom and I was talking to other friends and moms of multiple, like they talked about delegation all the time and not just in childcare, but like with your home and, you know, getting cleaners in, you know, cleaning an entire house. Like it's like delegation, I feel like, is so important as a mom in whatever capacity you can do that. do that. Yeah. So I get it. And you're the second guest very recently that has talked about the sort of life admin meeting that happens between, you know, you and your husband or you and your partner. Like, my husband and I are trying to get better with that, but I do think that's a great life hack and it's tangible. So thank you for sharing that as well.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
So talking about mental health, wellness, is there something that you do that sort of keeps you sane?
It's very simple. I tend to walk or run every morning before I get myself ready. And I'm not really a morning person. I would probably, you know, my ideal wake-up time, according to 23andMe, is 8:12. And I was like, that really does feel right. Like, that's probably the time I would like to wake up. But I do find that if I'm rushed in the morning, it really, like, sets me off on the wrong foot. And so 3 days a week, I'm running with my dog. I've got a 100-pound puppy who is my firstborn. And he's not even a puppy. You know, he's 6 years old. But so I'm usually running with him. And I do feel like running really clears my mind. I don't listen to anything. I actually leave my phone behind. And it's just that, you know, hour that I have with my dog that I find, like, kind of pretty therapeutic. And on the other days, I actually just go on a walk around the park, and I give either my sister or my parents or actually my girlfriends a phone call. You know, a lot of my other friends are also moms, and they're up early in the morning. And strangely enough, I do feel like that 5-minute check-in to say, hey, you're good? You know, or like, no, I'm terrible. All the kids are sick. I'm absolutely miserable. But like, whatever that may be, it just kind of puts me in the right mental space for the rest of the day. So that's probably what I do most to keep myself sane.
I love that. And I love that you shared too, the connecting with a friend. Like, sometimes that makes all the difference. I know in my day is like just checking in with a friend, whether they're a mom friend or a non-mom friend, or like, I don't know, just even talking about the weather, just like having that connection sometimes like makes me feel, I don't know, back to like a balanced state. I don't know. So I really like relate to that.
100%. You know, what's so strange is I think, and a lot of people have said this to me, and I didn't quite understand what they meant, but motherhood being this incredibly lonely thing. And like, you know, I've got a husband who's wonderful and you know, we obviously share a lot, but he's also incredibly busy. And I do feel like sometimes you just feel so lonely. And I do feel like those phone calls where you're saying like, yeah, you know, like we're all dealing with our own craziness, but, and we both rely on each other so much. I think it's just knowing that the other person needs you just as much as you need them. That feeling to me, I think is, I don't know. It's such an amazing part of female friendship. Yeah. And I treasure it and I need it in my life.
Yeah, absolutely. That relatability, that connectedness. I'm like so there with you. So Sarah, what like lights a fire in you? Why do you do what you do? Like, talk a little bit, I guess, too, about like MM LaFour's mission as a brand.
Sure. You know, okay. Yeah. I do what I do because I do think it is what I just love to do the most. I think it is what energizes me. And I, for some reason, I have always been drawn to women. You know, I grew up really in a household of girls, and I went to an all-girls high school. I have a really great group of female friends. And I do think, over the course of my life, like whenever I've had the opportunity, I'm always interested in understanding and getting to know more about women. And so I think even in college, when I wrote my senior thesis on, I worked in a refugee camp in Zambia, and I wrote my senior thesis actually on the community of women and the prostitution actually and sexual exploitation that happens in refugee camps, but really like focused on women. And even in deciding to start MM, I never thought of myself as a fashion entrepreneur or wanting to start a fashion business. I really wanted to start it because I wanted to solve a need that I felt like working women were uniquely facing, which is that you know, women on average spend 2 more weeks a year getting ready for work versus men, which is just kind of insane when you think about it, right? Like 2 weeks. It really adds up the amount of time that we put in getting ready for work in the morning. And I was like, I wonder if there's a way that I could A, make this easier for women, but then also help them feel more empowered about the way they look and the way they dress, and, you know, not only have it be like, have clothing be a tool really to not only change the way other people feel about you, but the way you feel about yourself that day. So I think that's just been that is really what drives me and the company's mission. You know, we have this very lofty goal that the world is a better place when women succeed. And, you know, I think the way we do it, my company does it, is through clothing, is through styling women, but there's so many ways to do that. So I don't know. It's a great question. Why do I do what I do? I almost like couldn't tell you. I just feel like it is, yeah, it is just something I've always been drawn to.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I love that. I love that. And it's simple too. It's like, you've been drawn to women and your brand really exudes that and your platforms do. So, I mean, I think it's incredible. Touching back on the fact that it's the brand's 10th year anniversary, what are some like lessons that you've learned about sustaining a brand, and I guess post pandemic, right? Because it's like, God, it must have really evolved so much, like workwear in general, right? It's changed, the world's changed. Like what's that all looked like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I do think the most important thing for a brand is to say something unique that nobody else is saying, and to be kind of unapologetically true to that vision. So it's funny because I have a lot of like fellow founder CEOs that I talk to all the time. And a lot of them, I think if you looked at it from the outside, you might say like, oh, those are actually your competitors, right? But I don't see it that way at all. Actually, I think every single brand, you can't really copy what the next brand is saying, because that's actually kind of a recipe for disaster. You never want to be somebody else. You really have to stay true to your message. And for us, that happens to be about empowering really busy working women, and really staying true to that mission. And so I think that's probably the most important lesson I've taken away, you know, in terms of running a brand. I will say in terms of running a company, probably the biggest lesson that I've taken away is that you can't fight the big trends. You can't fight the wave. You know, I think what's going on in the world, what's going on, whether that's, you know, the pandemic or, I don't know, some macro trend that's going on, or call it a recession, right? Or even a boom time. Like, you can't fight those trends. And the most important thing you can do as a business leader, a business person, is to understand what's happening out there and to try to do tactical things that allow your business to succeed with those trends. But you can never fight, the wave. And I think that has actually probably been my most, you know, humbling lesson, being a founder, for the past decade and a bit.
Yeah, totally. It always makes me too think about like the ability to like be flexible and adapt. And I feel like we've all gotten so good at that in the last, I guess you want to call it two and a half years.
Yeah, I think that's true, you know, and I think, I'm not a yogi by any means. And, but I do think when they say you have to kind of let it go. I always actually used to fight that. I was like, well, if I let it go, then I wouldn't be a founder. Like, I wouldn't be standing here if, I didn't want to fight for the things that I wanted. So I always kind of thought that was, I don't know, like just advice to not, that advice that I never abided by. Mm-hmm. And I do think what I have learned is, of course you want to fight. Like, of course you want to preserve like that passion within you and do the thing that you believe in, but don't think that you can, you are bigger than, what the world has in store. You know, don't assume that you can control the way the world's going to move. And I think to your point, that flexibility and being able to kind of accept things as they come is actually, in, I think in many ways allows you to be a more, a better business leader. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Sarah, as one of my last questions, like, do you have any last words? Like, what kind of impact ultimately do you want to leave on women, your customers, with your platforms and your business?
Yeah. So, you know, I shared a little bit earlier that the company's, you know, vision is the world's a better place when women succeed. And I think for the first decade of the business, we've really been focused on what does that mean for our customers? And I think, you know, to a certain extent, what does that mean for our team? And so, you know, we've done various things across the team, like salary transparency. Actually, we launched that back in 2017, and that was a really, really important part of the company saying, you know, we really put our money where our mouth is. We want to make sure that our women are making just as much as the men. But I think right now we are, as a company, you know, I was thinking, okay, what do I want to do for the next 10 years? Like, do I want to keep running MM LaFleur, or am I going to go do something else with my life? And I had a really, you know, I had a good moment to reflect, especially during the pandemic, and said like, okay, actually, this is what I want to be doing with my life. Like, I really feel passionately about what I do. And I want to see this through the next decade. But then I felt like it wasn't enough for me if I just kind of, you know, if it was just about serving our customers, as much as I love them and you know, need them for this business to survive and thrive. I think for me, I wanted to move beyond that. And so for us, that meant actually like looking at our supply chain and saying, okay, how do we work with more female mills? How do we work with more female owned factories? How do we make sure that the women who work in the garment industry, so 95% of sewers are women. 95% of the people who make your garments are women. How do we make sure that they're actually making a living wage and that they're getting a lot of the labor protections that are so common in America, but not in many other places in the world? And so I think looking at our supply chain, making sure that it is truly ethical and as transparent as we expect them to be, and ultimately sustainable. Like, I think that is where I'm turning a lot of my attention for the next 10 years. And that motivates me. That really does.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I love the sustainable mission. And I can't let you leave though without talking, I guess, a little bit about MM LaFleur and like any styling advice that you have. So like, obviously, things have changed post-pandemic. We have women still working in more corporate environments and startups and working a full day in a city maybe. But then, you know, people are working remote and juggling motherhood. Like, what are a couple pieces of like styling advice that you would want to leave with female listeners?
For sure. This is the stuff I love to talk about. I think you cannot deny the power of a jacket. And I think the jacket is, in fact, emerged post-pandemic as maybe the most important wardrobe item. And the reason why I say that is because we are now living, many of us are living these hybrid lifestyles where sometimes we're working from home, sometimes we're at home, but then suddenly we're going into the office or suddenly we're going into a meeting. And the jacket has this power to transform whatever you're wearing from off to on in a moment. And and so long as whatever I could be wearing pajamas underneath, but if I put a jacket on, most people would be like, ah, this lady showed up for work. And it is just amazing what the jacket can do. So we really talk to our customers about that. Like, a lot of customers wear a knit or even a t-shirt, right, with jeans. And that's how they're, you know, chasing after their kids or, you know, meeting with their girlfriends or whatnot. But just like, put a jacket in your bag, like throw a jacket on your shoulders. And if you ever need to go do something slightly more formal or something where you need to dress up a little bit, just throw that jacket on. And I promise you, you will feel like a million bucks. And a good tailored jacket at that, you know, really, really just think about the tailoring when you're buying your jacket. And then I would say the other things very similar to the jacket, the role that the jacket is playing now is jewelry and accessories. And I understand if you're, you know, everyone is so busy. And so like changing out your earrings might feel like the last thing you want to do, but especially if you're wearing kind of simple, elegant, you know, quiet luxury is all the rage these days, very understated pieces. Mm-hmm. I think the jewelry is where you can really make an impact and show that you put effort and care into your style. And so they don't need to be expensive. You know, you can pick up jewelry pieces really wherever you go. They do not need to be diamonds from Tiffany's. But actually play around with it, have fun with it, and change out your accessories depending on what you're wearing. I think you will come to enjoy the process if you don't already. And it will do wonders for your outfits.
Absolutely. I love it. And then what are the names of some of like your best-selling jackets? So we can just link those out in the show notes.
Thank you so much. Well, the Moreland jacket has probably been one of our best-selling jackets basically since we released it. It's a machine washable jacket, which is really, really hard to come by. And it has pockets. And so it has a lot of things that make it practical. But I would say what makes it most appealing is that the cut is so sharp. And this is, you know, all credit to my co-founder, Miyako Nakamura, who's the creative director and the designer. It is just such a beautiful jacket. The other jacket that I'd be remiss to not include would be our Lilia and Porter jackets, which are, we call them our interweave jackets, but they are made in Japan. And they are beautiful, beautiful boucle jackets. You can throw them over denim. You can actually dress them up if you want to and pair it with black slacks and honestly wear it to something as elegant as the opera. It is just an amazing, we call it our heirloom piece because we want it to be something that you pass down to your children. That's how beautiful they are. But those are the three that I have to mention.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. And thank you for sharing so many gems with us today. What's next for you? Is there anything exciting coming up that you want to share before you go?
Yeah. So we have a few stores that we are opening this year. We actually just opened our store on the Upper East Side in New York City a few months ago. And we actually just literally last week opened our store on the Upper West Side in New York City. We've got a store coming in Washington, D.C. We already have one actually on K Street, but we've got another store coming later this spring. And then we've got some other stores popping up throughout the rest of the year. So, you know, please check us out online, mmlifler.com, if you live outside those cities. But if you live in the New York City area, we'd love to see you in one of our stores.
Perfect. And Sarah, where can everybody keep up with you, follow you, and all of that good stuff?
Oh my gosh. Well, I am notoriously terrible at posting on Instagram, but should you care to follow me, I am at Sarah M. LaFleur, LaFleur. I'm trying to get better about sharing things, but thank you for bringing that up.
Fair enough. Hey, you're a busy lady over there, so we get it. Thank you so much, Sarah. I can't wait to come visit you guys in New York City. And thank you for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Emily. Take care.
You too. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you found value from this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review, and tag us on Instagram at The Big Move Podcast and at mroberts.m. We always love connecting with you, and we'll catch you next time.